Welcome to episode 364 of Troubadours and Raconteurs with yours truly, E.W. Conundrum Demure. On this week's episode, we feature a wonderful conversation with New York City artist Rob Roth. We talk about his journey painting, directing, working with Debbie Harry and Joan Jett, Cole Escola and Michael Cavadillas. We talk about Verve and dreaming. Wonderful conversation with Rob Roth on this week's episode. We have an EW essay titled Peacock. Our associate producer, Dr. Michael Pavese, reads a piece by David Ignatow titled Ritual One. And we have an EW poem called Bow. All of this, as is always the case, will be imbued, infused with the wonderful energy of several great tunes. It's so nice to have you with us. Let's get to it. Episode 364 of Troubadours and Raconteurs. peacock. A cup of coffee and a cigarette, squatting outside in the early spring sunshine, turns me on deep and almost makes me feel complete, if only for a few moments. Birds blue, brown, rust red, so close they zippity-doo-dah past my shaved head, disassociated from what I thought was steadfast and normal, because of an invisible pandemic wave. We think about art and soul, and the breath of others scares us so, yet we need all of these to get through. Rob in New York City, and I here in my enclave of self-inflicted morbidity, discuss the state of flux that fuels our sense of reality. He paints watercolors with words while holed up in Manhattan. I sit in this chair with a peculiar sort of stare, thinking about the talk about the bell curve that we must flatten. Is this where I am, or do we exist in a film projected simultaneous on 7 billion screens? Some sort of dark comedy that suggests so subtle the adolescence which still is at the core of our dreams. And then, all of a sudden, I am back outside in the sun. A young woman pushes her child past and catches me smoking. A peacock runs by and shows us its colors. It leaps up into the air and lands atop a bear, staring at a bull in the Strait of Gibraltar. The woman pulls down her mask and smiles.
When I wake up in the morning, love, and the sunlight hurts my eyes, and something without warning, love, bears heavy on my mind. Then I look at you, and the world's all right with me. Just one look at you, and I know it's gonna be a lovely day. Instead of me, always seems to know the way. Then I look at you, and the world's all right with me. Just one look at you, and I know it's gone.
A lovely day.
Hello, Rob Roth, is that you?
It is I, Rob Roth. Is it Mr. Conundrum?
It is. It's so nice to have you on Troubadours and Rock on Tours.
Thanks for having me.
Before we get started, let me share a little background with the listeners. Rob Roth is a multidisciplinary artist and director based in New York City. He has continually combined a variety of media in his distinctive works of art using theater, film, audio, and performance. His work has been showcased at the New Museum for Contemporary Art, the Museum of Arts and Design, and the Whitney Museum of American Art, among others. In 2018, Rob premiered the highly praised haunting theater piece Soundstage, featuring actor Rebecca Hall, which the New York Times described in this way, quote, deftly evokes the fleeting transition from wakefulness to dreaming. Roth also directed the music video Doom or Destiny by Debbie Harry, a.k.a. Blondie, featuring Joan Jett, which appeared on several Best of 2017 lists. Rob recently finished creative direction for Debbie Harry's long-awaited memoir, Face It, becoming an instant New York Times bestseller. Troubadours and Rock on Tours is very happy to have on the program artist Rob Roth. All right, so thanks for taking time out of the, you know, busy pandemic schedule to talk with us. So, the pandemic, we're going to get into other stuff because enough people are talking about the pandemic, but are you in New York City right now?
I am, right as we speak. I'm here.
So it's basically the epicenter of it all.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a strange time. I was thinking, too, that my two favorite places on the earth, which are New York, my home, and New Orleans, are both kind of, you know, being hit the worst at this moment. And it's just so heart-wrenching, really.
It is. And I know this word has been used over and over again, but it is. I mean, I'm understanding the word surreal more than I've ever understood it before, you know?
Yeah.
So,
well, I was thinking when you do go out for the one time you do for groceries and how weird it all is, it's very odd because I keep thinking about how particularly American culture always, we've made so many films and movies about things like this. And it's like, it kind of is like we almost predicted it within our media or we fantasized about it in entertainment. And then when it actually hits, no one's prepared. And it's like, well, haven't we made a million movies about this? How is this not, you know, it's just ironic and so bizarre that we can't, you know, we're good at making like the fake version of it, but we're not very good when the real version happens.
No. We kind of act as if we are in a movie, perhaps, you know, so it's not real.
True.
Yeah. But we'll get maybe back into that a little bit more. I have a question related to it later, but first let's, you know, you're in New York City, you call it your home. Were you born and raised in New York City? You know, give us a little bit of your journey, how you got there.
I was born here. I was born in Queens. My family was from Flushing, and some of my family, my father's father, my grandfather was from Woodside, my grandmother's from Washington Heights, so we were a very New York family. My father was a New York City cop, so he was for many years, actually, and we did move out at a certain point, I can't remember how old it was, to the suburbs. He wanted us out of the city, and then I came back after high school.
And what borough do you live in? What borough do you live in now?
I live in the Lower East Side.
Great, great.
Where I belong.
And your background as an artist, you know, maybe we can talk a little bit before we get into your specific work, your influences. You know, you went to Pratt Institute, I know, which is a renowned arts college. What were some of your influences up to the time you got into college and then while you were there and now, you know, as well?
I went in a painter, but then I switched, you know, majors like every year or every 10 minutes. But essentially, before that time, I think my influences were a lot of the similar things now, like films and I always was a painter, but I figured out that I wanted the paintings to move, or that it just wasn't enough. But I, funny enough, anytime somebody, a younger person, you know, says, "Oh, do you have any advice for me?" And I always say to take a painting course, because you kind of learn everything you need to know in painting. It goes into every other medium, because you learn about composition and light and color and chiaroscuro and, you know, rendering and all of this stuff that, it, for at least for me, goes into everything I do. It goes into photography, it goes into theater, it goes into filmmaking. I look at everything through that kind of lens.
I love it. I paint myself. I'm not nearly as good as you, but I know what you're talking about, and it brings you somewhere else. You get lost. Do you ever find that you lose sense of time when you're working on a piece?
Oh yeah, you do that. I mean, everything. I mean, that's when you know you love it.
Exactly.
Is when, you know, time, so much time has gone by that your coffee's cold, everything, you haven't eaten.
right. The sun has set, you know.
Yeah.
We mentioned how you're multidisciplinary, you know, and you bring all of this together, theater, film, audio, performance. Do you see all of those, I guess, pursuits, all those projects, the verve, all being connected to the same place, coming from the same place?
Yeah, I always did. That's why everyone's always saying, "Oh, why do you do so much?" I'm like, I actually don't think I do so much at all. Every medium is just a different paintbrush or something. It's kind of like, and I combine them. So I cross them over. I kind of always am looking at one and thinking, oh, how does this relate to film, or how does this relate to theater, or can I combine the two? It's all the same to me, to be honest.
And when you paint, what style do you usually find yourself? Are you more abstract? Are you minimalist? Are you, you know, I mean, I can go on all different categories. Or do you vary? Does it depend?
Well, funny enough, I don't really actually paint anymore. I mean, I may pick up a brush when I'm doing something for a set or something for a photograph. But I really have, I've gone so far into live performance and film and photography more that I don't just make an actual painting anymore. I haven't really done that in a long time. Although during this pandemic, I actually have. So it's half a truth, because I've been doing some watercolors, just kind of doing character sketches. I make these faces and then I add a line about what was a fundamental truth about this character, and I'm making a bunch of them, and then I'm going to see at the end if they make a story.
When you say you add a line that is a fundamental truth of the character you're working on when you're painting, what do you mean, a written line of words?
Yeah, I write it above their head. Like, one of them was like, he never trusted anyone, and then the other one, I don't have them in front of me, I think the other one was he never knew what was true. Oh, there's another one. There was a woman, I painted this woman, and it just says above her head, she always preferred to swim naked. And that's it. And I'm going to kind of put them all together, like almost like tarot cards or playing cards, and see if they, you know, maybe a script comes out of it. I don't know. It's just a wacky kind of thing I'm doing during a pandemic.
You could be doing worse, you know, just sitting around eating Doritos like me. So what about theater? Let's get into that, because that is a big part of what you do. Again, you've received some acclaim from critics in the New York Times, among others, about Soundstage.
Yeah. Soundstage was the last big, quote-unquote, big piece that I did. Sometimes some of my works are smaller, and so like when I perform, sometimes it's more cabaret or something smaller. That was one of the bigger works that I worked on for. Oh, I'm sorry. I gotta turn off my so you won't get those dings.
It's part of your art. That's all.
Yeah, that's my. It's my idea. It's another idea. Every time you hear it, it's another idea. The Soundstage was the last big piece I did as a development at Here Art Center, and they have a program that is an artist in residence, and that was the piece that I made. It took me about 4 years to, you know, premiere that. But it was complicated, so that's why it took so long. But it was great.
Well, when we talk about theater as ritual, and you know, mm-hmm. what does that mean to you?
Well, you know, I think I've said that in an interview or something, and I do believe it. And I think generally, it's this thought process that comes from the idea that I think theater has come from ritual, meaning, like, you know, way in the depths of history, it's a gathering to watch a subject whatever your ritual is, you're watching it. And I think that kind of became theater. I mean, I grew up Catholic, and so I would go.
You're still recovering. You're still recovering, I suppose, yeah. like me.
There's so many things to recover from, but that's one of them. But I've utilized it because at a very young age, when I would go to mass, particularly with my grandmother in Washington Heights, there was this, a cathedral, like a big cathedral with the stained glass and the
FCC, Rob.
Incense and the pageantry. And I mean, I kind of loved it as a kid because it was so theatrical. I didn't really understand that that's what I loved about it. And then later when I found out, you know, it's all terrible, but it has this like amazing pageantry to it, right? The whole thing is theater. So that's kind of what I'm saying is it's a, you know, when you go see theater, you're gathering and it's a common need, and whatever you're getting out of it, whether it be some collective, you know, solidarity or some kind of reassurance or to maybe be disturbed, you know, whatever it is, it's kind of the same idea as going to a ritual with intention, you know, and knowing I'm putting myself here to feel something. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of, I think, what I mean by it. I mean, I remember Genesis P. Arjen in the Psychic Bible. What does he say? He says, ritual is the concrete expression of experience, which is kind of a really fundamental way of putting it. And I think that's kind of a great definition of it.
Yeah.
So, and I think, you know, theater can be, and performance art, and even nightlife, which I come from, you know, that nightlife was like a ritualistic experience. You dress up, you know, you get your ass out the door, you go, and you're kind of like, you know, dancing to this music and get lost in a trance with other people. You know, it can be very ritualistic.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. When you look at theater and you look at soundstage in particular, I want to focus on whether, first of all, the description that I mentioned earlier that came from the New York Times definitely evokes the fleeting transition from wakefulness to dreaming. Is that accurate? And what does it mean?
Well, it's probably the only good line from that review. That was a mixed review, but it is. I like that line because it is true. And that part they got, you know. Soundstage was it's a performance piece that is a combination of filmmaking as choreography and live theater. So it's many things. It's many layered. It's about isolation, ironically, which we're all isolated now in this pandemic, but it is about like isolation and fantasy and survival skills. But technically, there's two kind of layers of it. There's the technical idea I had, which was to have a live, you know, a really good Ari camera and a camera crew in Zantai suits. So there are these shapes, but a real director of photography on a dog stage. So it all becomes a character in itself, and it's observing the main character played by me on the stage, and it's projecting what it's seeing on the back wall. And the idea behind that is that the character is mimicking all of these many different scenes from many different fictitious films starring Rebecca Hall. She is only on stage in film, and she's in four different genres of film. And my character is constantly talking to her, mimicking her, I actually go into the films with her and come, you know, come in and out. And all the while, the camera that's live on stage is capturing what I'm doing, so that it projects it next to her, and it actually simultaneously, sometimes we match perfectly. So it's this idea of mimicking and fantasy and what is real and, you know, layers of different realities. And so it does go into dreaming. You know, it actually eventually, some people came back three times because there was so much to see at once, they missed it and they would want to come back, which was kind of the greatest compliment. That was my favorite.
Oh yeah.
When I heard that.
And Rebecca Hall, was she aware? I mean, did you film her for this, or was there a film?
Yeah.
Okay. So you filmed her separately.
Oh yeah. We worked on it I filmed her in four different scenes almost once a year. I think we did, because, you know, I have no money. So I make $10 look like $100,000. So I, you know, it just takes time. So I shot her in the different genres, basically once a year. And then at the end, we doubled it and had the last two in the same year. But all of it was written, you know, by Jason Napoli Brooks and myself, you know, for her playing that part. And I'm in only, I'm in two. I'm in the Italian horror section, and I'm in the late 60s talk show moment. So it's trippy, you know, the whole thing's trippy.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's kind of hard to explain.
Is she playing the same person in each genre, or is she someone totally different?
She's a totally different character, but she's the same actress.
Right.
If that makes sense. So she's the actress who's playing a part in the Italian horror. She's the actress playing the part in a Fellini kind of film. She's the actress playing the part in the noir. But then at the end, I'm interviewing her as the actress in her later years, almost like a Judy Garland thing. And you don't even know who's real, to be honest, if she's dreaming of me or I'm dreaming of her, or, you know, who's real and who's not.
And no, I'm trying to understand, and it is compelling for sure. So when someone walks out afterwards, they're going to say, wow, that was a trippy sort of vibe, and I like being challenged like that. Or are they going to be like, wow, there's a profound underlining theme there. And, you know, is there something they're going to walk away with that's concrete?
Yeah. So it's funny. A lot of times with my works, some people will just say, oh, God, that was so beautiful, which is great, because aesthetic is very, very important to me, because that's one layer. If you come and you just think it's beautiful, that's fine, mm-hmm. you know, with me. There's other people that go, I was completely riveted, but I was completely lost, which is also fine too. And then there's others who completely get it and are just can't even speak. Like, I have friends who are just like, who came back. They were like, I have to come back. I can't even, you know, there was so much to absorb, and I understand because also what I wanted to do, I've been wanting to do this for years, is the lens on the camera on the stage can pick up stuff on the stage that you never ever see in theater, because it's so close, and you can, you know, zoom in with beautiful depth of field, and you see my fingers taking cigarette cases. Like, there's things, details you never see in theater. And I wanted to see if in theater you could utilize film acting or film motion, which is more subtle, you know, on stage. And that's one of the things that happened. And people were like, some transfixed, and sometimes, you know, knew what the symbolism was on the bureau, or what, you know, they would notice things that were on live on stage were then in the film, like a glass or something. Like, it was all these like little, I guess you'd call them Easter eggs, but it was multi-layered, and you had to really look at it closely.
It sounds like a painting.
It kind of is. That's what I mean. It's like, yeah. That's what I mean when I say I'm a painter, even though I haven't touched a painting in a while.
Yeah, I think I get it. It's beautiful. It is beautiful.
Approach things. I don't know.
You're listening to Troubadours and Rock on Tours with E.W. Conundrum Demure on WFTE Radio, Mount Cobb and Scranton, Pennsylvania. community radio at its finest.
I love the way you're describing it. Rob Roth here on Troubadours and Rock on Tours, multidisciplinary artist and director, among other things, based in New York City. And let's talk about something that you worked on with the great Debbie Harry. There's two things in particular. Back in 2017, I guess, is when it came out, Doom or Destiny, the music video. How did you approach that, and what was it like? I watched it. It's great. You can check it out on YouTube if you want, folks. What was it like working with Debbie, too, and Joan Jett?
Well, Joan I'd never worked with, but Debbie I have known for 20 years. So Debbie and I have worked together on and off on several things, but we're also just really good friends and hang out and have a good time. So she's, you know, that... And she's great to work with. I love working with her because we still do. Joan, I had never worked with, and I remember at one point kind of being, I guess, a little nervous about it because I don't know what it was. I hadn't heard from her or her people, and I said to Debbie, I think it was Debbie. Yo, I remember this now. I said, "Oh God, you know, I don't know." And she goes, "Oh no, she's cool. She's like us." And I was like, "Oh really? Yeah, she's cool. Don't worry about it." And I was like, okay, I guess that, and she was right. And I finally get her on the phone, Joan, and she's like, "I love it, whatever you want." I was like, oh my God, that was the greatest conversation I ever had. So she was great. She was down for pretty much everything. I mean, they're the real thing. That's, you know, it sounds cliche, but it really is true. You know, they're the real thing. They've been through everything. They're legitimate rock chicks who have paved the way. I mean, and they're not
FCC, Rob.
You know, they really had a good time. It was the most, I mean, it was hard work, that whole thing, for me, but watching them have fun, like when you watch the video, they are having so much fun together. Yeah. And to me, that was the most joyful thing to watch, that they're still friends, that they're still making work, that they're still look great, you know, and just had a really good time together. They love each other.
I didn't realize they were such good friends. When you guys put the video together, who was the creative driver in it? Was it all three of you or more folks behind the scenes? Did you wing it? Did you have a, you know, how did it come together, the production, the vision of Doom or Destiny?
Well, I pitched it, the idea. I mean, the management came to me and was like, what would you do if this was the music video? And it was a no-brainer. I pitched it, I sent it, they all loved it. And then I don't know, other people might disagree. I'm pretty meticulous as far as, I storyboard stuff out pretty meticulously. But I always leave room for improving things or have, like putting them in front of a news desk, you know, I set it all up. I have certain things I want to do. And then I just told them, go for it. And they started ripping apart all the VHS tapes. I didn't tell them to do that. They were just, Debbie pulled her wig off. I mean, you know, it was
FCC, Rob.
Fucking great. I mean, we were all laughing and having a good time, which is what you know, you should. It's rock and roll. But for me, I have a lot of the ideas already, you know, storyboarded out, mostly because when you're working, as I do, very low budget, you don't have the luxury of time to I'm going to figure this out. You know, you have to really get the structure there. And then I know when to create the moments that are spontaneous and you can discover, because I think that's really important, too.
Well, I guess when you're an artist and you're going to be true to yourself, and I think probably you would agree, when you're going to do your best work is when you trust yourself. You can't constantly be overly sort of stymied by fear of looking foolish or making a mistake or something to that effect, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's not easy. But I also, because the video had such a, you know, hilarious sense of humor, that made it a little easier, because I also know, you know, Chris and Debbie I've known for so long, and I know their sense of humor, and we all have it. It's like this dark, stupid, punk, funny sense of humor. So, and Joan kind of has it too. Like, they get it, you know. And the funny thing about that video is it did really well and people loved it, but then I got all these conspiracy theory people got wind of it, and it caused this whole thing. And it was so funny because I'm like, that's kind of, you're missing the point, is kind of what it's kind of all about. I was just laughing. Like, there was stuff, comments on it that were so outrageous. And, you know, calling them witches, like actual witches, like her and Joan are, it's very funny.
What conspiracy were they like thinking you were connected to through the video?
There was one I didn't understand, that some kind of thing about Seattle. There was one about the Illuminati. There's one about that they were witches, and what is that called?
FCC, Rob.
Shit, I can't. It's all in the comments on YouTube.
So just check it out.
Just go deep.
Oh, Rob, I'm having a ball. I'm having a ball talking with you. So let me ask you, I didn't tell you I was going to ask you about this. Maybe this is connected. How about your short film? You worked on a short film one time, didn't you? Junkie Doctors, is that correct?
Oh, yeah, that was a while ago. That was a long time ago.
17 minutes or so. Is that something that helped you evolve to be able to do the work in Doom or Destiny? Or are they totally separate sort of entities or approaches?
No, there was just, I mean, it's a short film. I wanted to do, at that point, as a film and video artist, which is what I was kind of more known for, everything was very, not even short form. It was like these snippets, video projections or installation stuff or things that looped. I wanted to try to do a longer form. And that was my first attempt to do, a short narrative. Now, it was written by my friend Michael Cavadillas, and but I directed it, and we kind of, I don't know, what was great about that was I worked with Cole Escola, who since has become, really quite big, and I knew it, I knew Cole was going to become really successful because he is such a unique kind of comedy. He's such a nutbag, but so amazing. Like, he's so funny, and it's so dark, and he's the kind of performer that you can't teach. You just have to have it, and he does.
Yeah.
So that was fun to work with him then. That was a while ago.
Yeah, when was that? I didn't catch the year. I just was doing some research on you. Was that back in the 2000s, right?
Yeah, you'd probably know more than I do. Yeah. I don't even know what it is.
Yeah, we'll look it up. We'll look it up. So, how about, Debbie's memoir, Face It? I know a person that has been on the show in the past. I think she's probably the reason you're on with me, Jody Morlock. She worked probably at your direction, under your direction for Face It. What was that? Was that a new type of challenge for you, doing all the artwork, so to speak, being the creative mind on the visual aspect of the book?
Yeah, that was actually the first. Yeah, that was the first book project I ever worked on. Jody, I adore.
Oh, she's awesome! Amazing. Yeah, yeah.
And I love. And the funny thing about that is how I got to know Jody was the Doom or Destiny video, because some of the clothes that Kitty Boots, the stylist, picked were from Pat Field, and the ones that I picked from there before I ever knew Jody were Jody's. And they were the ones I used in the video. And I was like, I love this, whoever did this. And Kitty was like, oh, that's Jody Morlock. She's great. And when I started working on the book a couple of years later, I had still never met Jody in person. And I finally was like, I really feel like she's right for this. I feel like she's the one. I wanted there were two illustrators I worked with. And I wanted it, one a male and one a female, mostly because Debbie is so, knowing her, she kind of possesses both male and female traits. Like, I think we all do, but she particularly. So I wanted that to kind of flow through the book. And Jody also she's just got the right, I just love her work. It's so beautiful. So she was thrilled to do it. And we finally met. It took so long. And she was as great as I hoped. You know, when you're kind of, you don't know the person, but you know the work, and mm-hmm. you love the work, and then You're just like, oh, I hope this person isn't an
FCC, Rob.
Yeah. He wasn't.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And we're almost out of time here. Let me ask you a couple other questions, if you don't mind, Rob.
I don't mind.
The present, back to the pandemic, okay? Do you see some fodder in this pandemic that we're experiencing that maybe in the future you can use in some sort of production, some sort of artistic endeavor?
Yeah, yes. I mean, I couldn't tell you what that is now because we're still in it. Personally, for me, I have always reacted to whatever is happening around me through my work. I mean, it's just always, I sometimes don't even realize it until later. I kind of look back on the piece and I'll go, oh, that must have been about, you know, post 9/11 or AIDS or, you know what I mean? Whatever it is that you go through, for me at least, it absorbs and it doesn't mean the subject is that. It's just, it may be the frustration comes out through, you know, the idea or the performance, or it could be more subtle, or, you know, yes. And I think that's, I would guess that's true for many, many artists. I don't want to, you know, speak for everyone, obviously, but I think that's what we do. You absorb everything and you kind of spit it back out. It's, you know, and it can be spit out aggressively or subtly, or you could do something beautiful just to alleviate. Or you can, you know, reflect something back that's more truthful. You know, it's everyone, that's the beauty of art and everyone's interpretation of what they see.
Wonderfully put, Rob Roth. Well, people could find your work, and I'm sure you have some future projects that you'll be working on. I don't know if you want to mention anything in terms of contact information, social media information, or if you want to give people a heads up about a project coming.
Well, the next thing I'm actually working on right now is a three-part short film series that is like, it's a documentary, but it's kind of my weird version of it. When Blondie went to Havana last year for the first time ever. And so I went and I documented the whole trip and I shot a lot of it on 16mm and 8mm. And it's really beautiful. And it's a three-part mini series that will go up online. I'm not sure exactly when, but that's what I'm working on now, and it's looking quite good. I'm really happy with it, and that will be in conjunction with an EP, a live EP that they recorded of the two nights that they performed in Havana with Cuban musicians. So it's really special. It was really great. So that's kind of next, and then otherwise, I'm slowly working on what I would call part three of my female lead studies. Like, it's the next one after Soundstage, tentatively titled Backstage, but you know, it'll probably take 10 years to make, but you know, who knows. Other than that, you can find me on, you know, the only thing I really do is Instagram. I know I'm on Facebook as an artist page, but I can't even remember what I'm so, I don't know if I'm bad at it or just uninterested, but Rob Roth NYC is my Instagram. So
we'll have to check
that out. If anyone's interested.
I'm sure.
I don't know.
I'm sure they will be. And lastly, any words to the folks listening, given where you are at the moment?
Well, I really do, you know, if this is this, I don't know. This is the first thing that came to my head. New Year's Eve, I was upstate with my friend in her farmhouse. And, you know, New Year's Eve was very kind of calm this year, that we didn't do much. I think we made a fire. We hung out, just the two of us. I think we went out to see one person for a minute. And the word that kept coming to me was slow. And I don't know. I just kept thinking, oh, this word slow keeps coming to me. And for, you know, since New Year's Eve, I was like, well, 2020, slow. What does that mean? 12. And now I just feel like, okay, yeah, it's slow. Like, we have to take it slow. You have to slow down and calm down. And I don't know. I think that's the best approach, at least for me, and I now understand why that word came to me then and has been coming to me. It was almost in preparation to everything's going to, you know, stop. And I think priority, I hope, I don't know if this is true. The one thing I can hope for is that priorities switch or adjust after we're through this, because I think that's generally needed.
Well said. Rob Roth, thank you so much for being on Troubadours and Rock on Tours. I wish you the best, and take care of yourself as you travel around and as you hold up there in Manhattan.
You too. Thank you so much for having me. I hope I didn't blab on too long.
Not at all. It was a pleasure, sir. Thank you so much. Take care.
You take care too. Bye.
I'm in the phone booth. It's the one across the hall.
Ritual 1 by David Ignatow. As I enter the theater, the play is going on. I hear the father say to the son on stage, "You've taken the motor apart." The son replies, "The roof is leaking." The father retorts, "The tire is flat." Tiptoeing down the aisle, I find my seat, edge my way in across a dozen kneecaps as I tremble for my sanity. I have heard doomed voices calling on God, the electrode. Sure enough, as I start to sit, a scream rises from beneath me. It is one of the players. If I come down, I'll break his neck, caught between the seat and the backrest. Now the audience and the players are on stage. Their heads turned toward me, are waiting for the sound of the break. Must I? Those in my aisle nod slowly, reading my mind, their eyes fixed on me, and I understand that each has done the same. Must I kill this man as the price of my admission to this play? His screams continue loud and long. I am at a loss as what to do. I panic. I freeze. My training has been to eat the flesh of pig. I might even have been able to slit a throat. As a child, I witnessed the dead chickens over a barrel of sawdust absorbing their blood. I then brought them in a bag to my father, who sold them across his counter. Liking him, I learned to like people and enjoy their company too, which of course brought me to this play. But how angry I become. Now everybody is shouting at me to sit down or I'll be thrown out. The father and son have stepped off stage and come striding down the aisle side by side. They reach me, grab me by the shoulder, and force me down. I scream, as if to cover the sound of the neck breaking. All through the play I scream, and am invited on stage to take a bow. I lose my senses and kick the actors in the teeth. There is more laughter, and the actors acknowledge my performance with a bow. How should I understand this? Is it to say that if I machine gun the theater from left to right, they will respond with applause that would only gradually diminish with each death? I wonder then whether logically I should kill myself, too, out of admiration. A question indeed, as I return to my seat and observe a new act of children playfully aiming their kicks at each other's groins.
Mist falls within snow squalls, lightly chilled under a gray sky lullaby, with quick peaks of sun rays asunder. And this time I measure, and this space I endeavor, toward conquest is teeming with distress, unrest, and I don't know how, though I breathe deeply with eyes closed and bow.
How's it going? Once was a thought inside my head. Before I reach 30, I'd be dead. But somehow on and on I go. I keep on rolling with the flow. Folks said that I would change my mind. I'd straighten up and do just fine. Oh, but I still love rock and roll. I keep on rolling with the flow. All guys my age all raising kids. sins. Some might be calling me a bum, but I'm still out there having fun. Jesus loves me, yes I know. Friends, they forgive me of my sins. Can't take it with you when you're gone, but I want enough to get there on.
And there you have it, episode 364 of Troubadours and Rock On Tours, with yours truly, E.W. Conundrum Demure. I'd like to thank those folks who made this episode possible. First and foremost, Rob Roth, our associate producer, Dr. Michael Pavese, writer David Ignatow, and these musical artists, Django Reinhardt, Stefan Grappelli, Bill Withers, Blondie, Joan Jett, Kurt Vile, of course, Branford Marsalis, and Terrence Blanchard, too. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time, let's give it a go and try to enjoy this time. Take care.